The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus told his disciples a parable. Can a blind person guide a blind person? Will not both fall into a pit? No disciple is superior to the teacher, but when fully trained, every disciple will be like his teacher. Why do you notice the splinter in your brother's eye, but do not perceive the wooden beam in your own? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me remove that splinter in your eye," when you do not even notice the wooden beam in your own eye? You hypocrite, remove the wooden beam from your eye first, then you will clearly see to remove the splinter in your brother's eye. A good tree does not bear rotten fruit, nor does a rotten tree bear good fruit. Every tree is known by its own fruit. For people do not pick figs from thorn bushes, nor do they gather grapes from brambles. A good person, out of the store of goodness in his heart, produces good, but an evil person, out of the store of evil, produces evil. For from the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaks. The Gospel of the Lord. Good morning, everyone. I always feel like I say the same thing around this time of the year, but it seems like we were just celebrating Christmas, and now we're moving into Lent. This Wednesday is Ash Wednesday, and it's hard to believe that we're going to be on fast track to another season, a season that leads us to the great feast of Easter. And of course, Lent is a very special time in the church because it's a time for us to really take serious where we stand in our relationship with God. For many of us, we realize that Lent is an opportunity for us to take up certain types of practices that we may not do all the time. Many of us like to say that we're giving things up for Lent as an act of sacrifice. But we know that the general tone of the season is one of introspection, reflection, repentance. And of course, that's often marked by the fact that on Ash Wednesday itself, we receive the cross on our foreheads, reminding us that life is short. We are dust, and to dust we shall return. So the urgency in our spiritual lives to get things in order is really brought upon the fact that our lives are short. Even if we live very long, 80, 90, 100 years, that's nothing in comparison to eternity, right? So every time we come to Lent, it's an opportunity for us to remind ourselves that we're not here for long. So what are we doing in the here and now to get us prepared for heaven? And I think that's something, a theme that I really would like to reflect upon this Lent for me personally. I'd like to share that with you here today. What are we doing to prepare ourselves for heaven? Now, this is different than thinking, what do I need to do in order to get to heaven? Because that can almost have some type of almost obligatory actions on our part, thinking that, well, we have to do certain things, we have to do them well, and we maybe not even want to do them, but we have to do them because, well, we know that heaven's important, and that seems to be a better place than hell, so we got to do all those things to get there. When I say, what are we doing to prepare ourselves for heaven? is more about an attitude of excitement, an attitude of longing, an attitude of desire. Do we desire heaven with all of our being? One of the great things that we have in the tradition of the church is the veneration of saints. Now, many of us may have maybe a peripheral knowledge of saints. We may understand saints from stained glass windows, holy cards. We may hear tidbits of saints' lives. We have our go-to saints for certain things, right? Like when we lose something, we may ask St. Anthony to help us out, right? But if you really get serious into looking at the lives of the saints and you start to read their writings, the one common theme that will kind of pop out of every writing from a saint is their intense restlessness. They were messy people, saints, because they were yearning, striving to want to know what it is to understand who God is in their life and what they could do to pursue God more in their life. We can go back to the time of St. Augustine, and we might remember a famous line that St. Augustine said, "Our hearts are restless until they rest in you, O Lord." Now, Augustine, we know, was someone who was searching for God in all the wrong places through much of his earlier life until he had a great conversion to the faith and became a great saint in his own way. And we hear a lot of other conversion stories in the 2,000 years of the church's history. One of the most notable conversion stories in my life is that of the Trappist monk Thomas Merton, a very worldly man who was pursuing God, or really just pursuing some type of pleasure or happiness in all the wrong places, until he became passionately desiring to find the intimacy with God ultimately as a monk. But the one interesting thing is that the restlessness of the heart that a person may have that can only be fulfilled in God doesn't stop when they find God. In fact, I would argue that it actually grows more intense. When Augustine says that his heart was restless until it rested in the Lord, it wasn't as if once he became a Catholic that everything was now okay and that he could go into this place of just being comfortable. I would argue that his restlessness increased because now he knew that entering upon the mystery of God in the person of Jesus Christ meant that it was an unending well, a black hole, if you will, of just going deeper and deeper in a relationship with God. The gospel that we heard today, I think, touches at the very heart, if you will, of what it means to be in communion with God. Because it ends on this very pithy statement of Jesus when he says, "For from the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaks." From the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaks. For the past 7 weeks, I've been actually teaching a class. I've been doing it on the computer online to a group of about 20-some students. And it's a class on faith and reason. And it's trying to understand, is it reasonable, using our intellect, to believe in the God of Jesus Christ, to believe in Christianity? Is it reasonable, or is it just simply something that we do on an act of faith? Now, of course, the short answer is that it really requires both. But when we come to our knowing who we are in light of God, where does that take place? Does it take place in our mind? Do we just have to read more books about God, read more books about Jesus? Does it take place in our imagination? Do we just have to somehow picture who God is, picture who Jesus is, have images in our mind as to how God comes to us? The mind and imagination are extremely important in preparing ourselves. Yet at the very intersection of where each one of us encounters God is through our heart. And of course, I'm not talking about the beating organ that's right inside your chest. We know that the heart is something that's so real that we can't really even explain it because it's so real. Our heart is what makes us long for happiness, for joy. Our heart is what makes us want to wrong rights, or to correct right wrongs, I should say. Our heart makes us want to seek perfection. Our heart wants us to be content. Our heart wants us to give love to another. But we know that the heart is very unruly and can lead us to many different places. We can have disordered affections. We can fall in love with the wrong people. We may not be faithful to our commitments because our heart drags us away from them in some way, shape, or form because we're confused. The heart is unruly. Yet it's the heart that we go to so that we can seek God. But how do we know if we're on the right path? Well, this gospel, I think, gives us a clear indication. Since the heart is so unruly, and since the heart can make us do things that we may not want to do, we could fear our heart. We could fear our desires and our wants. And what we end up doing is we start putting walls up around that heart so that its passion and desire don't bleed through. And it takes us to a point of being judgmental of others. Because the minute that we start looking at another person and we start making judgments about that person, or we start pointing out their faults, or we start thinking that somehow they're really not God's chosen, so to speak, or they're not worthy of God's love, or whatever type of judgment we want to make, or decision that we think that we have the right to make, that should be a warning sign for each one of us that we've done something to harden our hearts. Because we're trying to find security in being able to think that we're better than other people. It's our way to convince ourselves that we're doing things right by looking down on others. And I would say that as we enter into this time of Lent, we should, in a certain sense, rejoice that we have this warning sign. We should rejoice, in a certain sense, that we can find ourselves being judgmental of others. Not because it's a good thing to be judgmental, but because it's a way for us to realize how hardened our hearts have become. And it's an opportunity to now soften our hearts. And how do we do that? Well, we do that by coming to the very heart of hearts in Jesus. Perhaps one of the most popular devotions that we see in the church is the devotion of the Sacred Heart. There's always images of Jesus' exposed heart. And there's lots of things that maybe we can kind of pick up from that image. But the one thing I would like to offer as our meditation this morning and as we enter into Lent is, are we praying that our heart may beat in complete union with the Sacred Heart? May the pumping of our heart, the beating of our heart, be in complete unison with the Sacred Heart of Jesus, so that it is one heart that is beating. Not our heart and Jesus' heart, but one heart. Because what else do we do here but come to communion? And do we come to allow our heart to be in communion with the Sacred Heart of Jesus that we receive through this Eucharist? That, to me, is the sure sign, the clear sign, that we are desiring heaven, that we're preparing ourselves for heaven, that we want to be in union with God forever. Not because it's just a good thing to do or because it's something that we should supposed to do, because this is what will perfect our relationships with one another. If we love God with all of our heart, we love our neighbor the same way. It's not two separate tracks. So if you find yourself, and I find myself often in this place, of being restless, yet seeking to find security by putting up walls in our heart, let us rejoice, because it's a sure sign that Jesus is calling us back to his heart, back to beating in unison with his heart, so that we in turn can love our brothers and sisters perfectly, the same brothers and sisters that we often judge and put down because we feel that we're better than them. Let's grow in an awareness of Jesus' love for us this day, and may we soften our hearts to receive it. May God bless you.